From the large front porch, Sally Jensen waved a welcome to the thick-shouldered rider approaching the house. Sheriff Monte Carson howdied back with a ham-fisted swing of his right arm.
You're just in time for coffee and sweet cake, Monty. Fried chicken, mashed potatoes, gravy, and jarred beans for dinner later on, if you've a mind. I've got pie, too.
Sounds dear to a man's heart, Sally. I'm obliged.
Monty dug into a coat pocket and produced a yellowish sheet of paper.
I've come on an errand. Telegraph message from Smoke.
No trouble, is there?
It depends on how you define trouble. I got one, too. You'd best read it and make up your own mind.
Sally's eyes tracked the page and took in each word with growing trepidation.
Dearest, please be in the Big Rock to meet the train on Wednesday. On board will be a boy named Bobby Harris. He is 10 years old and needs a home. I reckon the Sugarloaf would fit right nice. Give him the love and protection he needs. Monty will be there with you to meet him. Love, Smoke.
He's serious, isn't he?
Oh, I'm sure of that. The telegram he sent me asked that I meet you at the depot on Wednesday and help corral a youngster named Bobby Harris.
What am I going to do with a child that young around this place?
You mean once again?
Yes, once again. I swear, Monty, sometimes that man exasperates me. But if this is what Smoke wants, then this is what Smoke will get.
Trailing through the dry, barren desert south of Santa Fe, along the course of the Rio Grande River, Smoke Jensen rode his Appaloosa in a relaxed mood. For better or worse, he had managed the problem of Bobby Harris. Of course, that depended upon whether, when he returned, Sally met him at the door with a skillet in hand to feed him or to wrap him over the head. By mid-morning, the sun bore down with a vengeance. Hard to believe that fall was on the way. Already the aspens would be turning on the Sugarloaf. Frost in the shattered folds of the mountains. Hell, maybe even an early snowstorm.
Gunshot.
Yeah! Caution directing him, Smoke rode to the crest of the ridge. A long gaze over the edge showed him a stagecoach stopped in the middle of the road. 5 men, guns drawn, surrounded it. The shotgun guard lay slumped against the backrest of the roof-lined seat. The driver held the nervous horses in check. Already passengers began to climb from the coach.
Stand and deliver! Everybody outside, come on, hurry up!
The stagecoach door opened and Mrs. Perkins descended ungainfully from the stage and stood dithering. Her husband followed, then a Texan, who turned back to give a hand to an attractive young woman. At her appearance, the eyes of the road agents glowed with lust. Licking full, unseen lips, the short outlaw advanced with a flour sack.
Now, folks, we're going to take up a little collection. I want all your money, watches, jewelry, anything of value. Tie off them horses, driver. Get down here.
What do you want?
Well, driver, you're going to unhitch them critters and we'll run them off a ways.
You're going to leave us stranded out here? Man, that's cold. There's Comanches around.
So I've heard. Say, before you climb down, throw off the strong box.
We ain't got an express box this run.
You'd think we're stupid. We wouldn't have stopped this coach if we didn't know you carried the Y-Bar R Ranch payroll along with bank money for El Paso. Get to tossing.
Eyeing that highwayman for only a moment, the driver relented. The steel-strapped box hit the ground heavily.
Damn, that's a good lock. Fucking thing's hardly even scuffed. What the hell? Shit!
Smoke Jensen rode with his .44 ready. Sidewinder pounded over the ground on the downslope toward the stalled stage. He reined in and swung out of the saddle. Smoke used the broad side of the coach for cover. 3 of the enemy still remained. The leader took it upon himself to terminate this intrusion. He kneed his mount to the left and circled the team. He came into view. The boss robber raised his 6-gun a moment too late.
Die, you bastard!
Smoke reversed himself then and came around the boot of the coach. A lean, rangy redhead got caught off guard, eyes turned in the direction of the leader.
Over here!
The man turned, his pistol raised, but Smoke already had him dead to rights. The last man, a squatty highwayman, rushed at Smoke Jensen. At a distance of barely 3 feet, both men fired again. In a fleeting instant, Smoke saw the man's head snap backward while his boots kept coming forward. Then, a swift, hot blackness swept over Smoke Jensen and fell into oblivion. Rancho Paseo spread over thousands of hectares of cactus-strewn land. There, majestic Iberian bulls grew from infancy into powerful, thick-shouldered fighting machines of raw ferocity rarely matched in the animal world. Rubio Fanal had spent all his life with the huge creatures. He had worked for the former owner, and now he remained to serve Don Miguel Martín y García. Patron had been a famous pistolero. Rubio knew that. Yet his lovely wife and splendid children had mellowed him. Rubio respected Don Miguel. He would give his life for him. Too old now to wrestle with the stupendous strength of the toros, Rubio worked as a cook for the field hands. Early each morning, his wife of 40 years would make the tortillas and pack them in wet cloths. He loaded his small carreta with beans, flour, meat, and condiments and headed out into the fields. He was set up on a low knoll shaded by a big oak, and he heated the tortillas now on a sheet of iron laid over one of three cooking fires. Another held a gigantic pot of coffee. The vaqueros liked their coffee, a lot of it, fiery hot and strong. Beans bubbled in a cast iron kettle hung on a trestle over the same fire. At the third, half a cabrito, a young goat, rolled on a spit, turned by his youngest son, Ramon. All was peaceful and full of bounty.
Papa, look out!
From the corner of one eye, Rubio saw the wicked glint of a blade and an arm that looped wide to encircle his throat. Tomas Diaz, one of Gustavo Carvajal's lieutenants, smiled in satisfaction.
This is going to be easy. Take out the herd guards first. Do it silently so as not to frighten the bulls. Use your knives. Then we round up the herd and drive them away. Make certain everyone is dead. That way we can buy at least half a day to remove the bulls to a place of hiding. A friend from San Luis Potosi will be delighted with these new animals.
Carvajal's men moved swiftly around the herd and on the high plateau of Aguas Calientes. With caution and patience, they made their moves on the vaqueros watching the fighting bulls. Swiftly, the men died. The last man in position had the task of dealing with the cook. Paco Guzman was as lazy as he was fat. But for so big a man, Guzman moved quietly with an unexpected speed. He managed to close on his victim before he saw the small boy at the spit.
Papa! Look out!
Guzman didn't bother to check that his knife had gone true and the man's throat had been cut. He advanced on the terrified boy. Suddenly, immense pain exploded in the back of Paco Guzman's head, and blackness washed over him as he fell at the feet of the trembling child. His skull split by the heavy edge of a cast iron skillet. Guzman never knew of his mistake as he shuddered his way into eternity.
Stay low, mijo. Let them think we are dead. We must live to take word of this to the patron.
Sensation returned to Smoke Jensen in the form of brightness against his closed eyelids and a special scented softness surrounded his throbbing head.
Oh, he's alive. Mrs. Perkins, please bring some water.
Are you certain of falling out among thieves, if you ask me?
No. Oh, no. He saved our lives, don't you see?
What happened?
Oh, you were shot alongside of your head. It must have made you unconscious.
The other one, the last road agent.
He's lying dead across your legs.
I'd be obliged if you would have him moved.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm so sorry. Would some of you gentlemen remove that dead man, please?
Smoke Jensen maneuvered so that he could see his angel of mercy. And despite the pain, his breath caught in his throat. She was lovely, beautiful. A face that matched the sweet innocence of Sally Reynolds when he had first met her. He forced a rueful smile through his discomfort.
Thank you for caring for me. But I'm afraid your dress is ruined. All that blood.
Oh, dear me, I never realized.
Appears some folks have money to throw away on expensive clothes, then soil them beyond repair.
Well, I had to. He was hurt and needed help, don't you see?
You're one of them, aren't you? Had a falling out over the, loot. Isn't that it?
Sorry, you have it all wrong. I heard the shots, discovered the robbery in progress, and decided to take a hand. It seemed you were in considerable need of it.
A likely story. What is your name?
Jensen. Smoke Jensen.
Heaven protect us. The outlaw and murderer. We're all doomed.
I've been a lot of things, madam, but never an outlaw or a murderer. I never killed a man who didn't deserve it and was trying to do the same to me.
You're a scourge. An abomination.
Enough, Miss Perkins. All you know is from that trash in the Penny Dreadfuls. Mr. Jensen, we are grateful for what you have done to protect us from these terrible men.
At least he could have left them alive for the law to deal with, Penelope.
Excuse me? Did I just imagine the gunshot that knocked me out and left me to stand here in front of you bleeding from the head? They opened the dance. I simply invited myself to attend.
He's right, ma'am. You've all got your valuables back. We've saved the express box, and it's Smoke Jensen who made that possible.
But it's so uncivilized.
Let me bandage that for you. Are you sure you're all right?
Yes, of course. A little patching up, and I'll be on my way.
Oh, you should see a doctor.
I will, as soon as I get to El Paso.
The woman's touch proved feather light as she wound a strip of silk from a petticoat in her luggage around Smoke's head. With the bleeding stopped and the throbbing subsided somewhat, Smoke surveyed the scene once more, then mounted Sidewinder and rode off. Large pools of darkness covered the high pasture on Pasea Ganaderia. Martin and his segundo, Pablo Alvarez, stood looking down on the bodies of his herdsmen. They had all been knifed.
They deserve better than this.
See, it is true, Patron. This Carvajal is an animal. Our men were not armed. They could have easily been run off, frightened into keeping silent for long to get the herd safely away.
Carvajal did it because of me. My good amigo Carbon and I, alone, refused to pay him tribute. Are we doing wrong, Pablo?
No, Patron. You are not the sort of man who could stand by and accept the excess of one like Carvajal, nor is Señor Carboni Ruiz. We, the men and I, are all behind you. It is said that what vaqueros and flock tenders he has left, Don Esteban is arming and training how to fight.
That is right. As of this minute, I will do the same. If the men are willing to stay, they should be able to defend themselves. Even Padre Lorenzo agrees.
And this friend, the gringo pistolero, what will happen when he gets here?
Gustavo Carvajal will find Smoke Jensen, unlike any man he has ever known before. Much to his regret.
Only 3 hours off his original estimate, Smoke Jensen arrived in El Paso in late afternoon, 2 days later. He had located a suitable saloon, Cactus Jack's, and gone inside. Carbone had not as yet checked into the hotel, so Smoke had time to burn. Inside the large, well-lighted establishment, Smoke almost changed his mind. 5 young men, local rowdies it appeared, lounged along the bar holding court. Smoke instantly knew the leader, having studied the type for a long time. Smoke was plumb thirsty after a long day on the trail, and nothing was going to stop him from getting a beer.
Beer.
5 cents.
From the corner of one eye, he took in the way the young hard case named Herbie stared at him with narrowed eyes.
What was that you were saying about a year ago, Herbie?
Huh? Oh, yeah. It was up Colorado way, little down the Deacon. I'd stopped into this saloon, had a couple of shots, and started fooling around with this fancy gal. She was about to give me her price when he came in.
Are you sure it was him?
Sure as I'm standing here. Of course, everybody's scared pistless of him, except for me, of course. Then he turns those hard gray eyes on me. That's my old woman you're fooling with, he growls.
What'd you do, Herbie?
Give us another round, Myron.
Myron Hardesty moved slowly, awkwardly. He'd been studying the stranger and come to a conclusion of his own. He knew the tall tale Herbie Cantrell was spinning. The knowledge made his hand shake when he poured liquor into their glasses.
What's the matter with you, Myron? You got a hangover?
No, Herbie, no. Only I think you ought to hold off on that story of yours.
Oh, really? Why, Myron, old pal?
I just think...
No, go on. I think it's getting interesting.
Well, who asked you, mister? But I...
Whatever you say.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what did I do? I set the pretty dove to one side and turned to face him. Who the hell do you think you are to tell me that, I asked.
Well, I'm Smoke Jensen, he says, all cold and hollow-like.
Glory, didn't that scare you some, Herbie?
Oh, no, Walsh. You see, I already knew who he was. And he saw me, saw the way my guns was fixed, and figured out I was fast and good with him right in a wink. He says once more for me to let the girl alone. Only not so tough this time. So I says, you make me. And went for my iron. I had it out and on him before he could twitch. He went all white and his lip trembled. His hand wasn't halfway to his six gun. He opened and closed his fist a couple of times, swallowed real hard, and just turned away and walked out of there.
Lordy, Herbie, you was lucky he didn't pinwheel you.
No chance, Evans. I had it figured out long before. Smoke Jensen is an invention of them dime novelists and penny dreadful writers. He's a bag of wind. He saw a real gunman, and he turned tail. Set up three more for me. And Myron, these boys is paying.
That's quite a story, youngster, considering there's no place as deacon in Colorado.
You calling me a liar?
Only suggesting you may have made a mistake in the location.
I think you called me a liar. Now you trying to back down. What you got to say to that?
I think you wouldn't last 5 seconds if you challenged Smoke Jensen.
You're a liar, Ann Yella. You don't talk to Herbie Cantrell like that. Nobody does. I got 6 notches on my guns.
Any fool can take a Barlow and cut notches in a pistol grip.
First you call me a liar, now fool! Do you want to die?
No. Do you? How about you three?
Oh, no, we're out of this. We ain't no gun handlers like Herbie.
You don't need this fight. Step down from it.
Go to hell! I ain't even gonna wait for you to go outside. You're gonna die right here. Draw!
You killed Herbie!
No shit, dumbass. I told him to step down.
In the momentary confusion, Smoke hadn't noticed another man slip into the bar behind him. He silently snuck up on Smoke, his hand creeping slowly towards Leather and the hog leg he had holstered there. Smoke whirled at the sound. Through the slowly dissipating powder smoke, Smoke Jensen made out a huge charro hat, bolero jacket, and tight pants of a Mexican vaquero.
Ah, Senor Smoke. You must mind always to watch your back, como no?
Carbone, you old hound. How'd you find me here?
And just in time, I suspect.
Carbone nodded toward the three wide-eyed cowboys still seated at the table, their hands in clear sight.
What about these gatitos? These kittens?
Ah, they're out of it, Carbone.
Excuse me, senor. When you came in, you called him Smoke. Smoke who?
Smoke Jensen.
Then Herbie must have never backed you down nowhere, huh, Mr. Jensen?
No. I tried to tell him that.
He was on the prod. Only this morning he got fired for the third time this month. Don't reckon you could have talked to him out of nothing. Well, anyways, we best be right now. Best get back to the ranch before we get sacked too, if it's all right with you, Mr. Jensen.
Might need you to tell the law what happened here.
Well, yes, sir. We'll sure stay long enough to do that.
After the law had come, asked the usual questions, and departed, Smoke and Carbone moved on to an eatery next door to the saloon. Over roasted pork and parsnips, Carbone began the explanation of the troubles that had prompted Martine and himself to ask for help.
A number of years ago, not long after we assisted you in that small affair up north, Martine and I decided to hang up our guns. We had both accumulated considerable wealth, so we bought land. And with it came all the villages, people, livestock, and the large haciendas. We also took wives of good families. We are gentlemen now. Caballeros, instead of pistoleros. We have lived the good life, at least until this former hill bandit, Gustavo Carvajal, raised a small army of bandidos and began a program of conquest. Up until 3 years ago, this Gustavo Carvajal was a third-rate bandido. He commanded perhaps 10 or 12 men. Scavengers, mostly. Half-starved much of the time. Taking the leavings from larger bandit gangs. Then, something happened to change all of that. He may have gotten some bad tequila or had a long bout with fever. Afterward, Carvajal claimed to be the reincarnation of the last Aztec emperor, Montezuma. He even dressed up in a feathered cape and headdresses when the spirit was on him and began calling his followers Jaguar Warriors or Eagle Warriors after the divisions of the Aztec army.
Sounds like he's not too tightly wrapped. I think what followers he had would desert wholesale from something that crazy.
Perhaps. I'm sure many did. It attracted a different type of men, though. Before long, his gang grew to over 200. They became a small army. At present, he holds sway over 3 states in central Mexico. Durango, Zacatecas, and Aguascalientes. Collects tribute from all of the haciendas, the villages, even some merchants in the larger cities.
Except for you and Martin.
Exactly.
What about this King of the North you mentioned?
That is what Carvajal calls himself when he is not being Emperor of the Aztecs. When he is, shall we say, sane.
Can't the army do anything?
The Ruales are mostly untried amateurs. They are policemen, basically. The army is busy with the Indian uprising in the south, and bandits in Sonora. Besides, they only defend the property of friends of El Presidente. We are not so big, and with our pasts, we are hardly counted among those close friends of Diaz.
So that leaves Carvajal to run free over as much territory as he can control with his 200+.
There are only about 150 left.
Left? How's that?
These scum hit one of my villages, burned it down, then hit another. Oh, they took it and looted it, but 67 of them were buried there. Now, I strongly suspect, and Miguel agrees, that they will attack a village on the Martin y Garcia Estancia. This is why we decided to ask you to come and take hand in the game.
Does Martin have a partner?
No. That is the way it is here. When one takes a wife, he also takes her family name. So we are Miguel Antonio Martin y Garcia and Esteban Carbon y Ruiz.
That's what I call really being married. Don't laugh, but I never knew you two had first names, let alone this double last name thing.
It did not suit us to use our full names, amigo. And speaking of double names, I suppose I am through with that.
Oh? Why is that?
I had meant to mention it earlier, but we got off on this cabron, Carvajal. Not long before I left to come here, an assassin fired from long range at our hacienda. Was no doubt intended for me. My wife walked into the path of the bullet. She is dead, and our children are half orphans.
That was Carvajal's doing.
No doubt. I appealed to the local Rurale company. The captain in charge said without seeing the shooting there was little he could do. I later learned that he was in the pay of Carvajal.
And it's like that all around where you're going.
When has the law being bought by your enemy ever bothered you, Smoke?
150 of these bandits and their suck-egg law dogs, you say?
Yes.
Against you, Martin, and I. The odds seem about right, I reckon. Will the workers on the ranches fight?
Ah, who knows? They are peons. Some will, a few will run and hide. Others may even carry information to El Rey.
Then we had better get started. First, though, I have some telegrams to send.
Her dress, a creation in purple velvet edged with delicate lighter lavender lace, had come from Bancroft's in New York. The matching hat, huge, feather-bedecked, and with a flowing veil, came from Flaubert's of Paris. Fortunately, the hem dropped modestly to an inch off the ground, which hid the utterly practical and utilitarian cowhide boots that Sally Jensen wore under her fashionable ensemble. She stood in the shade of the overhanging cupola of the Big Rock Railroad Station of the DNRG. Beside her, looking grumpy in white shirt, black trousers, cloth vest, and tall Montana peak hat, stood Sheriff Monte Carson. Every few moments, he reached up to smooth one side or the other of his full walrus mustache.
Are you sure he will be on this train?
Either Smoke told him to do it, or the little tyke's got sense enough to have sent me a telegraph message from Denver verifying he'll be on today's train.
Oh, I'm relieved, Monty. I wonder what he'll be like. I've wondered ever since Smoke's first message.
He'll be just fine. If Smoke Jensen took a liking to the boy, he'll be first class, you can be sure.
About 10 minutes later, the train rolled into the station. Just for the engine. Tender rolled past the platform, followed by a stock car, two baggage freight cars, and a single passenger coach. The conductor swung down to the platform before the train came to a complete halt and set in place his small boarding step. A moment later, three persons got off the rear of the passenger car. All were adults.
Monty, is there something wrong?
Why, I don't know, Miss Sally. Appears he's still inside.
I'll go see. He must be shy.
Nah, you wait here. I'll go.
With that outrageous hat, that badge, and your gun, if he's shy, you'll scare the pants off of him. Excuse me, conductor. Is there a small boy on board?
Oh, yes. He's a live wire, I'll say, ma'am. He has a pony in that stock car, too.
Oh, my. I hope it's gelded.
It's a mare.
Dear me. Smoke won't like that. Our stallions are prized stock. Be such a waste. Oh, but where's the boy? He didn't get off with the others.
A small hand waved from the cab of the locomotive. Then a head topped by a mop of reddish blonde hair and a ridiculous little round hat popped out of the window.
Hello? Are you Ms. Smoke Jensen?
Sally started forward. Monte Carson cut diagonally to reach the side of the locomotive first. The boy's head disappeared inside. And a moment later, a beefy, beat-faced engineer handed him down to the sheriff.
There's a fine lad he is. Regular chatterbox. Kept us entertained all the way from the water stop at Arapaho.
How did you get in the cab?
Well, it was a water stop, so I got off the train to...
That's enough, boy. You're in the presence of a lady.
Sorry, ma'am.
Funniest thing. It was this little pup wetting down the track. Afterwards, he asked if he could ride up front, and we saw no harm in it. Made the time go by quicker, if you know what I mean.
Thank you very much. All right, Bobby, we'll get your pony in her tack and start for the Sugarloaf.
Yes, ma'am. I learned some new keen words when the fireman banged his thumb on the boiler door.
I bet you did. Smoke, do you have any idea what you've gotten us in for?
Hand carts and two-wheeled carretas, drawn by burro, horse, or ox, streamed slowly through the cobbled streets of Juarez. Mounds of beans, onions, chili peppers, lettuce, and cabbages filled them. The big horses of Smoke Jensen and Esteban Carbon created eddies among the market-bound merchants in the early dawn light.
So this is the town named for the hero of Cameron.
Smoke and Carbone turned into Ferrocarril Railroad Avenue.
You know our history?
Some of it. Preacher helped organize the University of the Rockies for the mountain men. He had even more books than he had reloading gear. This place is growing fast.
And that it is. For all the many Mexicans who distrust or even hate the Norteños, they seem fascinated by being close to the border. We'll have time for coffee and pan dulce after we load the horses.
I'm still uneasy about Sidewinder in a stock car with some stranger.
The railroad employs older vaqueros who can no longer keep to the saddle all day to care for the livestock they ship. They know how to handle spirited horses.
Sidewinder's more than spirited. He's a killer. I've got another horse like him. Even they don't get along. I'll have to trust you if you say it's okay. It is. Hell, I don't have any choice.
After they settled in on the train, Carbone suggested they take a stroll to the smoking car. There, dedicated drinkers had already started in on snifters of brandy, shooters of tequila, or bottles of beer. Two men at the tiny bar rattled dice in a leather cup and played a game incomprehensible to Smoke Jensen. A card game was in progress at one round table. Two empty chairs indicated a lack of players. Carbone took one of the vacant chairs eagerly and extracted from a pocket a soft leather pouch of gold coins. Introductions were made around the green felt table. Smoke drifted to the end of the bar nearest the table where he could observe. Play began briskly. One player, a small, intense man with a narrow face and long nose, soon drew Smoke's attention. He had been introduced to Carbone as Javier Iturbe, Smoke called. He had phenomenal luck, more skill, the mountain man reckoned. He won clearly a third of all hands and every one he dealt. A warning tripped in Smoke Jensen's mind. Iturbe had too much good damn luck. He started watching it closely. Although they played a game he didn't recognize, it took little card sense to spot a holdout rig and the deft substitution of cards from an identical deck. Fifth time the man substituted a card from up his sleeve for one in his hand, Smoke eased away from the bar. He bent and whispered to Carbone. Years of experience of maintaining a cool disposition kept any sign of shock or anger off the Mexican gunfighter's face.
Jace, bring me a tequila. Our breakfast seems to be sticking with me rather too firmly.
Smoke returned to the bar and returned with the tequila. When Smoke bent to place the liquor beside Carbone, the smoothed back black hair tilted. Carbone spoke softly.
Next time you see him do it, let me know.
Two hands went by with nothing from the cheat. On the first, he failed to take a single trick. On the next, he lost to another player by one trick. The third round went to Iturbe when he took three fast tricks with what appeared to be the highest ranking card in each suit. Smoke recalled that in the hand Iturbe folded, he had at least one of the cards with a single pip. No doubt an ace, Smoke now considered. It hadn't shown up in the next hand. Iturbe had just played it to take his third trick. Smoke had to admire the man's talent. He had sense enough to vary his technique. No wonder no one else had spotted Iturbe cheat. Already Iturbe was gathering the pace towards. Smoke gave a nod to Carbone.
One moment, Señor Iturbe. My friend has a question to ask you about the game.
I am interested in the number of light cards in the deck, Señor. How many are the same?
Why four, as in any deck, one for each suit.
Odd. I'm willing to bet that there are at least two of each suit at the table right now.
Are you suggesting something, Señor?
I'm saying that the card with the single red diamond tip and the one with the king and black circle, with which you took the fifth and final tricks, have duplicates somewhere on your person. Also that the black circle single pip card was withheld from two hands ago and only now reinserted into your hand.
Gringo cabrón!
Iturbe's hand darted for the front of his frilly shirt. It never got there. The wicked tip of the big bowie knife in Smoke's hand rammed through Iturbe's hand and pinned it to the green felt table. None of the other players moved. The distinguished gentleman quickly lost his expression of horror for one of chagrin.
My apologies, Don Esteban. I had no idea this ladrone was a cheat. We will, of course, make good on your losses. There is no need for, more forceful satisfaction. Do you agree?
Si. Bastante bien, Don Pablo.
Good enough for me.
You let a stinking gringo do your dirty work for you. I have been insulted and robbed by such fine gentlemen and their tame dog of a gringo. Mierda en la laje de ellos madres. I will get even for this insult.
Iturbe wisely made a hasty exit from the smoke car.
Something tells me that it would not be wise for him to follow up on his threats. We were not introduced, Señor. I am Don Pablo Guitarras y Soto.
Smoke Jensen.
Ah, I understand the speed with which you acted now, Señor Jensen. And Carbone Ruiz would be Esteban Carbone, pistolero famoso of Jalisco. Well, gentlemen, we are in momentous company. Shall we resume play?
Suddenly, Iturbe thrust open the door from the vestibule and entered. He raised his uninjured left arm and thrust it forward.
Die, you punta! Die!
A masterful piece of shooting. We are indebted to you, Señor Jensen. Cantinero, bring around for everyone in the car. We must celebrate the remarkable feat of shooting skill by Señor Smoke Jensen. Let's make a fiesta of it.
It won't be much of a party for that fella.
Myron Hardesty did not like it one bit. Three hard-bitten outlaw types had entered Cactus Jack shortly after opening at 11 that morning. Seated around the table in one corner near the painted glass window, they had been drinking heavily into the late afternoon. Trent, Vickers, and Yates, they called themselves. Trent had wheat straw hair that stuck out in all directions, close-set, nearly colorless blue eyes, a gap between his upper front teeth, and a decidedly truculent attitude. Vickers was a weasel-faced individual with a penchant for back shooting, unless Myron had missed his guess. He had small, round ears that stuck out like handles on a cream pitcher. Yates filled every bit of the captain's chair in which he sprawled. A dough ball, presumably, but Hardesty suspected his fat hid iron-hard muscles.
Saddle bums.
One thing Myron Hardesty had learned from the grumbled conversation between one another was that they hated Smoke Jensen. Hated him more than Yankees, politicians, or even Mexicans.
I hate Smoke Jensen.
You said that before, Yates.
Yeah, about a dozen times. I hate Smoke Jensen.
You said that before, Trent.
Yeah, about a dozen times. I hate Smoke Jensen.
Shit.
Dang it all, we gotta do something about it.
Yeah, only we got here too late. Smoke Jensen's up and gone. Ain't that right, bartender?
Yes, sir. That's quite right. He and the Mexican.
Well, tell me again, where did they go?
To, Mexico, I think.
Yeah. But before he left, he killed a good friend of ours. Two good friends, right?
Only one. The, Mexican gentleman who met him here killed the other.
Ain't no such thing as a Mexican gentlemen.
Who was this Mezgin?
We've been through this before. I already told you I don't know. Only that Mr. Jensen called him Carbone.
Jeez, I've been thinking, fellas. If that's the Carbone I've heard of, maybe we'd done bit off more than we can chew.
Horse plop.
What's this beaner look like?
Big. A lot bigger than most Mexicans. Hands near the size of Smoke Jensen's. He's dressed up expensive-like. He had a big, flowing mustache drooped clear down to his chin.
What's Jensen doing in Mexico?
I don't know. But I heard folks say he and some high and mighty grandees were going to take on an army of bandits.
Fellers, there's one thing we can do.
What's that?
We can head south and join up with this El Rey del Norte. My guess is he's the one Jensen's after.
What are we doing when we get there? I can't speak Mezgin.
All we need to do is bide our time. Jensen will show sooner or later.
Yeah, and with my express rifle and that telescope, I can pop him and the beaner easy at a half mile. They'll never know what hit him.
Smoke and Carbone arrived in Mexico without further incident. Immediately outside the small pink stone depot on the side street, Smoke Jensen received his first lesson in how pervasive an influence Gustavo Carvajal had over the territory he claimed for his own. Tied by dirty string to a lamppost was a crudely hand-lettered poster.
Viva el Key del Norte.
In smaller print, it announced that the collectors of contributions would be in Torreon each Thursday to gather the gifts of a grateful people for El Key del Norte.
This is a bad one, amigo. Now he openly defies the authorities. What law there is in this town, if there is any, cannot be trusted.
Smoke had changed his carrying habits back in El Paso. He now wore two revolvers, one on the left, high up, but pointed forward, the other low and tied down on his right hip. He reached to slip the safety thong from the hammer of the right-hand .44, then did the same to the left.
Then our welcome might not be entirely warm.
Just so.
They continued down the long street at the heart of Torreon. On each block, they found three or four of the posters. When they reached the main street, which led to the cathedral, professionally printed posters were in abundance. Carbone nodded and pointed with an upraised arm to a storefront on the Plaza de Armas and a slant-roof livery-type building next door.
There is the establishment of my friend. It is best we obtain supplies and leave this place quickly.
Never had much jackrabbit in me. Unless some of Carvajal's hard cases muddy up the waters, I kind of favor taking our time.
I know you, amigo. You want to try them on, see what they are made of, eh?
Might as well know from the get-go, Carbone.
The pair proceeded toward the Outfitters, where four unsavory individuals lounged outside, two leaning on a tie rail. When they drew nearer, Carbone raised a cautioning hand to halt the progress.
Oh, I recognize two of those ladrones. They ride for Carvajal.
Shall we go ask them for the next dance?
It would be my pleasure.
Four hard cases had seen him, and no doubt recognition had been mutual. They knew that their jefe had put a price of 5,000 pesos in gold on Carbone. Perhaps La Dona Fortuna had put them in the way of earning that bonus this day. Just then, three more of the pistoleros joined the quartet of Carvajal's bandidos, exiting the outfitter's store and blinking at the bright light. Their momentary vulnerability signaled a prime opportunity.
I think right now.
Los manos arriba!
Carbone, cool as ever, put a round in the gut of one bandit. Smoke Jensen had not been lagging. He had triggered two rounds, wounding another of the seven and putting two others into a dive for the protection of a water trough.
This is gonna be work from here on.
Too true.
Carbone raised the sights of a six gun to blast the life from a bandit crouched in the doorway to the Outfitters. But that made only two down and dead for certain.
Shit!
Fat and flushed to face, a bandit lumbered into the middle of the street, extending the area to be covered by Smoke and Carbone. The surviving bandidos used the lull in firing to make a run for the screen of trees and shrubs in the center of the Plaza de Armas.
We're gonna have to hunt them down or be back shot.
We had better split up. Go at them from two directions.
Good idea. Ready?
As much as I'll ever be.
Let's do it!
Smoke ran diagonally across the bedding of smooth, rounded rocks that formed the roadway. His destination? A cairn of native stones with a polished granite slab that appeared to be some sort of monument. Smoke crouched behind the monument and turned in the direction of the gunshots.
One less, amigo!
Only three more to track down. Rusty hinges creaked on a balcony door behind Smoke, and he jerked around in time to see the grinning face of a bandit looming over him. In his hands, Carvajal's follower held a short-barreled shotgun. Smoke ducked low and returned fire on those so determined to kill him. Smoke saw faint movement of a pair of legs through the screen of carefully manicured shrubs. Slowly, he edged to a more covered position beside the fountain. Fragments of the bandito's kneecap flew into the bushes, along with scraps of his trouser leg. He went down like a cut-off stalk of corn.
Smoke! Duck! Ooh. That's the last of them, amigo.
Smoke Jensen surveyed the scene of carnage.
Seven down, 150 to go. Not a bad day's work. Right now, though, I'm hungry, and I could sure use some coffee.
My mouth, she is a little dry also. If we could have some brandy in that coffee, it would help.
Yeah, suits. Then we get outfitted and leave here. I've got a feeling we're not about to receive the key to the city.
Genuine joy glowed in the eyes of Bobby Harris.
You mean I get to have a full-size horse all for my own?
Yes, you do. Only you have to pick it out, gentle it, break it to the saddle, and to ride.
Bobby scowled at this.
This is a working ranch, Bobby. Everyone carries his own load. If you're going to ride for the brand, you'll have to do everything any other cowboy would do.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
So far, Sally Jensen reflected, all had gone well. Bobby was as cute as a button, although streaks of willfulness often put a brittle edge on their relationship. He was testing her, she realized. In contrast, Bobby had taken well enough to Bert Crocker, the foreman at Sugarloaf. In fact, Bobby looked up to Bert with almost as much shine and adoration as he reserved for her still absent and beloved Smoke. She made an effort to banish her loneliness and put on a smile.
Look at it this way, Bobby. Once you learn to gentle and break a horse Smoke's way, you'll be doing it with the hands. And you get a bonus paid on each one of your broken horses when it is sold.
I do? Oh, gosh, Miss Sally, that's awful nice. But it takes so long doing it Smoke's way. Why can't we just do it the regular way with tied down sharp spurs and a whip? We could break them 3 times as fast.
Because, young man, if Smoke Jensen ever caught a hand or anyone else treating any of his horses like that, that man would be fired on the spot. Usually after a good thrashing by Smoke.
I guess if that's the way Smoke wants it, that's the way he'll get it.
And don't you ever forget it.
Oh, no, ma'am. Is there any biscuits left? And some of that blackberry jam? I'm sort of hungry.
And here the dinner dishes are not dry an hour. Mind, Bobby, only one. You'll spoil your supper.
Two? I'm awful hungry.
Two, then. But mind what I said about spoiling your supper.
Spoiling the kid. Wasn't that the truth? What would Smoke say? It felt good to be in the mountains. Smoke Jensen breathed deeply of resinous pines and relaxed. He let his mind digest the situation they had encountered in Torreon. It seemed to him to be more than coincidence that the seven had been present at the outfitter's shop. It was almost as though they had been waiting for him. He shared his conclusion with Carbone.
It is possible. If Carvajal knew of my intentions to meet with you and bring you south, men might have been waiting in Juarez. There is a telegraph line as far as Aguas Calientes. Even in the state of Chihuahua, it would only take a little of Carvajal's money to buy information as to our destination.
Funny. I had been thinking the same thing. What about their being in that particular place?
Velasquez is not only the best outfitter in Torreon, he is the only one. So if Carvajal's men knew we were traveling light, they would expect us to show up there.
Old friend, I think that we should stay in these mountains for a while. Avoid places where Carvajal might have support. If we manage to confuse them, if they lose the trail, we'll regain the initiative and strike where they least expect.
Of course, amigo. You have the right of it. I fear I am out of practice at thinking deviously.
Where had you intended for us to go?
Directly into my estancia.
What say we take the next small trail leading off the main road?
We would end up in the small town of Pueblo de la Paz. It's a mining town, like many around here.
Under Carvajal's control?
Not openly, at least. There are some stories I've heard. For some reason, Carvajal has so far left the town alone.
Then that's where we shall go, my friend.
Luminoso Soto sat in the chair in front of a roll-top desk. He laced pudgy fingers over a swell of belly that would have done justice to a hot air balloon. His small, close-set pig eyes glittered with avarice as he listened to the man in front of him. Making that report was his partner in the small silver mine above the town of Pueblo de la Paz, Gaston Moro, the jefe de policia, chief of police.
You realize what this means, Luminoso. We must have more men at once. This new vein is rich and thick. It is nearly pure silver. One can almost gouge it out with a spoon.
I have no desire to eat this stuff, compadre. I don't even like it for itself. It's what you can exchange it for that excites pleasure in my heart.
In contrast to his partner, Gaston Moro had remained whippet thin with the lean lines of a swift hunter. He continually despaired of Soto's preoccupation with food and drink. While Luminoso lived to eat, he, Gaston, ate, and sparingly at that, only to keep alive.
Listen, Primo, this is serious. If we cannot obtain men from outside, we will have to begin using the villagers.
No. We will be hanged from the belfry of the church if we try that. So far, the people have tolerated our unusual methods and prospered along with us. We must not turn on them now.
So be it, then. I leave it up to you to recruit new workers for the mine.
Never fear, Gaston. There will be an adequate workforce when it becomes necessary to tap this new vein. Meanwhile, what have you done about Alfonso Lares?
The cantinero with ambitions of joining our partnership? Well, in light of your opposition to dealing harshly with the locals, I'm not sure what can be done. If you want my opinion, I suggest that we need to arrange for him a little accident. A fatal one.
Alfonso Leras awakened in jail. His head throbbed and his mouth was dry as sand.
Por Dios, what am I doing here?
You ought to know.
Triunfo Cienfuego rounded the corner of the box-like cell in Pueblo de la Paz's municipal hall.
We found you standing over the body of your son you had just murdered.
I? Murder? No, it is not possible. I did nothing to Carlos.
Come, Leris. You're guilty as sin and you know it. Poison. That's a woman's weapon.
The City of Peace.
Smoke Jensen and Carbone rode past the small sign at the outskirts of Pueblo de la Paz.
I hope it's as good as its name.
For our sake, yes. Let that be so.
After arranging for the care of their two pack horses and gear, Smoke and Carbone rode to the smallest of the three saloons in town and entered it to wash away the dust. Four men who looked hard and dangerous sat at a table near a beehive-shaped fireplace. They eyed the strangers with suspicion and hostility.
Maybe not so peaceful after all, amigo.
Time will tell. Two beers, bartender.
Carbone used the back of his hand to wipe foam from his pencil-lined mustache.
Aye, such a dandy. Why didn't he just lick it off like a real man?
Carbone made to ignore the heckler. Smoke Jensen eased away an arm's length and unobtrusively slipped the hanger thong free on his .44.
Speak up, I can't hear you.
So much for the City of Peace.
He's all yours. I'll keep the other three off your back.
Thanks.
You walk like a man with a cob up his...
Instantly, the man's companions sprang from their chairs, ready to take on this impudent stranger who had offended the town's premier bully.
Don't!
The three men looked at each other, and then each of them slowly put their hands up, not liking a cold look in Smoke's eyes.
Get up! You haven't learned your lesson yet.
You're the one who's going to...
The man staggered on his feet, but Carbone was not quite done with it. He grabbed the man by the arm and hurled him towards one of the tables gathered around the bar.
That seems to have settled that.
Put up your hands. You're under arrest.
Smoke Jensen looked up as the jailer approached their cell, accompanied by a small, nattily dressed man with a heavy shock of gray hair. He wore a once white, now aged gray suit, and he had himself a homey face.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I am to be your attorney. Do you have any money with which to pay me?
First off, what are we charged with?
Oh, that is simple, senor. You are charged with drunk and disorderly, assault and battery, and resisting arrest.
Mierda! We were insulted! We were attacked!
Who threw the first punch?
You have me there, Senor Abogado.
You know his name?
An abogado is an attorney.
Now, then, as to the matter of money?
We can pay you.
Fine, then. Your case will be best served if you plead guilty.
Tell us something first about the man who will be prosecuting us. Are you as good as he?
Well, I should say so, since I am also the man who is prosecutor for this court.
Thank you for your time, Senor Abogado. We've decided that we'll be quite capable of defending ourselves. Your services will not be needed.
Oh, the man who defends himself, as it is said, has
a fool for a client. We have the saying in our country as well. We'll see you in court, counselor.
Stupid gringo.
Do you think we'll have a chance?
Do you think we'd have had one with him on our side?
I regret to say that neither way do you caballeros have a chance. But still, you are lucky. For you, it will only mean the mines. I have a more tragic fate awaiting.
What's that?
I am to be executed for murdering my son.
Smoke and Carbone quickly discovered the nature of their neighbor's plight and heard for the first time of the slave labor in the mine. That, Alfonso Leras assured them, would be where they were going. He was to be silenced for having wanted to invest in the mine.
My greed cost me my son, and now my life. For we were both surely poisoned. What is there to do?
For a start, we could break out of jail.
Darkness had come to Pueblo de la Paz. True to his usual custom, Triunfo Cienfuegos, the fat, easygoing jailer, loosened the belt and chest harness of his uniform.
Socorro! Por amor de Dios, ayúdame! Socorro! Estoy moribundo!
Who's dying?
Hey, Corsolero! This man's sick.
Ocales! Go to sleep and stop making noise!
Ayúdame!
Cienfuegos vaguely remembered something about poison and being involved with Lares. Frowning, he dropped the chair to the floor and levered his way out of it. Alfonso Lares lay on his bunk, doubled up in a ball of pain. His face was wet and shiny in the dim light of a single kerosene lamp that sat on a high shelf halfway down the corridor. In the adjoining cell, Smoke Jensen and Esteban Carbone stood close to the dividing wall of bars. Their faces wore worried expressions.
Get back! Get back! Now, what's the matter with you?
I've been poisoned. That food we ate?
Nonsense! You're the one who uses the poison.
Help me!
Stay where you are. I'm coming in.
Cienfuegos entered the cell and knelt beside the bunk. Suddenly worried, the jailer reached out and took the prisoner by the shoulders. Gently, he lifted Lares to a sitting position.
Can you stand?
Lares nodded. Cienfuegos held him to his feet. He tried to take a step and suddenly lurched violently against the turnkey. Cienfuegos slammed back against the open wall of the bar. Instantly, large, powerful hands grabbed his head and hauled Cienfuegos back. Carbone reached for his bulging waist and plucked the pair of manacles from his belt. Swiftly, he drew the arms of Cienfuegos backwards and secured the cuffs on his side of the bar.
Lares, get the keys.
It worked!
Of course it did. Now move!
Carbone tore the tail from the jailer's shirt and stuffed it in his mouth. By then, Lares had their cell unlocked.
Lock both the doors. Bring the keys along. We'll be needing them.
That accomplished, they headed for the office. There, they located their belongings and quickly fastened cartridge belts in place. Carbone nodded to a rack of weapons.
You had better arm yourself, friend Cantinero.
Me? I am, as you say, only a cantinero.
As of now, you are a liberator of your town. Do as I say.
Si, patron. What do we do now?
We're going to round up the rest of the police, the mayor, and chief, and lock them in here.
I never thought I'd live to see the day. But I am as guilty as the rest. I was greedy and wanted to share in the mine.
No one need know that, Senor Lares. If you do your part in freeing this town from Luminoso Soto and Gaston Moro, you will be a hero to your people. Come along now.
Lorenzo Cruz, Felipe Zaragoza, Diego Santana had been in on the mine scheme from the first. They'd been chosen to keep the citizens of Pueblo de la Paz in line after dark. Typical bullies, they swaggered and sneered and generally intimidated the timid folk of the town. But all the violent experiences of their useless lives had not prepared them for Smoke Jensen and Esteban Carbone. Suddenly, the door to the jail burst open at a very unexpected hour. The three men stepped out onto the stoop. They advanced with hands on the butts of their 45 Mendozas.
Stop! Right there!
Or you what?
Shoot them!
Two men down faster than a rattlesnake can think to strike. Smoke Jensen had turned his attention on the third of their opponents. Diego Santana had suddenly developed difficulty with his six gun.
Looks like you missed. Betcha I won't.
I don't believe it. I only blinked my eyes, and when they opened, three men were dead. What do we do now?
Go find the rest and then pay a visit to the mayor and chief of police.
What is it?
Distant, alarming sound invaded the deep sleep of Mayor Luminoso Soto.
Gunshots?
Gunshots in the dead of night. If not a dream, what could it mean? He turned his head from side to side, seeking further enlightenment.
Must be a dream.
Beside Soto in the bed, his wife lay with open eyes, disgusted at her slovenly husband had kept her awake. She had heard the gunshots too, and she pondered their meaning now. Could the shooting mean that the people had risen in their anger against Luminoso? Could they already be on their way to the casa with torches and ropes? What would happen to her? Hesitantly, truly frightened now, she reached out to shake her husband.